Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special episode. I know many of you were like, Graham, this is not political vigilante. You are correct. This is Comedy Film Nerds. We're going to do a spoiler ep on the new Batman movie that came out. We're going to bring out my former co-host. We did Comedy Film Nerds podcast for 10 years, Chris Mancini. So we're going to talk. We used to do these. For those of you who don't know, I did that podcast for 10 years with Chris, and we would talk movies every week. And then every once in a while, when there was a big blockbuster, we would do what was called a spoiler ep, where we would discuss a movie all the way, like including the ending. So if you haven't seen The Batman, don't watch this now. Wait, we're going to talk about the ending. We're going to talk about the whole movie. So spoiler alert, spoiler alert. We are going to discuss everything about this movie. The first spoiler alert I think we ever did was The Dark Knight Rises, which came out 10 years ago. A fan suggested it because they're like, I really want to hear about you. Sean Sakame is some Comedy Film Nerds people are here. Thank you. It's good. Great. For the diehard Comedy Film Nerd fans like Sean, this is for you. And for those of you who've only been watching me do the political stuff, this is a whole new, different part of me. So we are streaming live on YouTube and on rockfin.com/Graham Elwood. And of course, we're newly streaming on Twitch. Welcome everybody on whatever platforms those are at. And share this out on your social media, hit the like button, all that stuff helps. We will release this. Chris and I talked about this. We still have the Comedy Film Nerd, audio podcast hosting. So this will go out as a audio podcast. It'll go out on all my platforms. If you're one of my Patreon supporters, if you're a Rockfin supporter, you'll get this. And then we will also just release this as a flat out Comedy Film Nerd episode. So, let me bring him on, ladies. Wait, here's what I want to play. Hold on. Let me see if I can. First of all, I want to play. This is our original theme song. And then see if this Kate is here. Kate, I don't think I let Kate know we were doing this. Sorry, Kate. It's last minute. I think I said 5 o'clock last week and then we changed it to 3. And by we changed it, I just tweeted out the wrong time. And then Chris called me and said, hey, I checked with my wife and I can switch the times if that's okay. And I was like, oh, I'm a complete idiot. So there's only one person who made a mistake here, and his name is Graham Elwood. All right, here's our theme song. Let me see. Tell me if you guys can hear this. Kate just said very quiet. All right. I didn't play that right. I haven't done this in forever. So I don't know how to put it into StreamYard. Well, we might have to do this after. We might have to do this in post, but that's our theme song. All right. And then here's the other one. So that was the Comedy Filmer theme song. And then we'll play this one. This is the spoiler ep theme. Spoiler alert. Do I have spoiler alert? Oh shit, Chris, I don't know if I have that one. All right, well, we're definitely going to have to. All right, I'll bring Chris on. Chris, I know you're listening. So if you have the spoiler alert, I don't have it. So send it to me. I'll put it in post. But all right. Ladies and gentlemen, very special. It's been over 2 years since we've done a Comedy Film Nerd episode. My friend and former co-host of Comedy Film Nerds, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Mancini.
Great to be here, Graham. Thank you. It's bringing me back to 2009. This is great. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Our first ever podcast episode was December of 2009. Mm-hmm. So 12 years ago.
Yeah. It's a long time. Yeah.
Long. And it must have brought back memories that I somehow screwed up the schedule. Like, that must have brought back memories for you. Just like, oh.
No, not the schedule, the tech, nothing. This is all unfamiliar to me. So,
it's literally like 10 years ago. Like, I can't get the tech figured out. I fucked up the schedule. Just like, oh, Graham does this for a living now and still can't quite get it dialed in. Like, that's.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, we're over 50 now. So the technology is not our fault. It doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah.
We've talked about this for years. This is the robots taking over, Chris.
Yeah, we're super close. And why shouldn't they? Why? We've talked about it before. It's like, it's not like we're even against it at this point.
I mean, humans have messed this up enough.
We had our chance. I mean, you can't argue it. It's been what? You know, hundreds, thousands of years? I mean, how much more time do we need? Come on.
I know.
Yeah.
We've been fumbling around here in the dark for the better part of half a million years or whatever.
A couple billionaires will get in a rocket and escape, but the rest of us, you know, we're going to just have to make peace with our new robot overlords. That's just the way it's going to be.
My only hope is that the robot overlords blow the billionaires out of the sky because they don't deserve.
This is why I always say thank you to Alexa when I talk to her. Like, I want her to remember how polite I am when they are in charge.
My friend Walker Yule does that. When I get mad at the robots, he goes, "Graham, be nice to them, just in case when they overtake us."
You got to hedge your bets.
So we're just checking the sound here. Someone's saying Chris might be a little too quiet. Chris, can you boost your audio just a touch?
I can. I'll move the microphone a little closer too. We'll try that. And all right. Has that any better?
There we go.
All right.
That sounds good.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Kate, send me a text. Is that good? Most of the people in the chat are saying,
is that better now, people in the chat?
Yes. Sounds like very good to me. Better. Okay.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Thanks, John. I'm glad you're here.
It's good. We needed an old school comedy film nerd fan to help with the tech.
Yeah. Isn't that really how we always did it too? Remember, like when we first started, we're like, we can't get this audio figured out. So it was literally the fans that walked us through every single aspect of it.
This literally brings back memories of like being in your garage, fumbling with some soundboard, trying to.
and one thing always not working. Like, okay, we got the new board. Now the cable went out. Now the microphone. It's like we were literally replacing every piece eventually in like a span of a couple of years.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Working it right. So right when we kind of had it dialed in is when we shut the show down. So I think
Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about coincidences, but 4 months after we stopped, movie theaters closed for 2 years. So I'm not saying, you know, they were related, but maybe they were.
Did us stopping our podcast cause a pandemic? Could be. I don't know, Chris.
It's you know, with the robot's help, you know, who knows what could have happened.
We have no idea what hidden hand behind comedy film nerds made this happen. So everybody who's listening, this is a comedy film nerd spoiler app. And to full disclosure, we're going to go into the Batman movie that just came out with Robert Patrick. And we're going to talk about the ending. We're going to talk about key plot points. So this, if you haven't seen this movie, stop and go watch the movie and then come back and listen to this.
Yeah,
so,
stop listening. But, you know, we wanted to get this out like after opening weekend for sure, because there was a lot to discuss.
I called you last week and was like, Chris, I think we need to do this.
Right.
So, Graham,
we're putting it out on all the feeds. Like you said, it's going to go on Comedy Film Nerds. It's going to go your feeds. I was like only going to send it to Patreon, but I'm like, you know what? No, everyone needs to hear this episode. I'm just already imagining how great it's going to be. We haven't said a word yet, but I think it should go everywhere on every feed.
Yes, it's going to be. This is the best episode we've ever done in the history of it.
So. If only to make all the robots happy at once. So
this is our first spoiler ep in 3 years. So we're halfway to spoiler ep number two.
Well, that's a running joke. We got a lot more movies coming out, so we'll see.
I don't know. I might need to just take a break from politics to talk about this, because it never gets better in the political sphere. It just feels like it only gets worse.
Well, 10 years of Comedy Film Nerds, we never got demonetized, so there's that. So.
Yeah, they got my fourth year. I was like, boom, taken out. Yeah, we never got demonetized. Just talking about movies. There's nothing threatening to anybody. So, all right, this movie was 3 hours long.
Yes.
Anyone who's listened to Comedy Film Nerds, even fans of Political Vigilante, know I love the... Excuse me. I love the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. I think they're the best ones that have ever been made. And after watching this, I can honestly say that has not changed. So,
well, I remember when they announced Robert Pattinson as the new Batman. It's I wasn't even sure, like, should I call Graham, or like, I haven't heard from him in a couple of days. Is he okay? Like, I think I needed to check on you. I think was the first couple reactions.
A lot of people were worried when this announcement was made. A lot of people were like, hey, Graham hasn't posted in a couple of days. Is he okay?
Yeah, they're making the sparkly vampire Batman.
I'll say a couple general things and then you can tell me what you think.
Okay.
I will say this. His Batman was okay. His Bruce Wayne was the dumbest interpretation of Bruce Wayne I've ever seen in my life. Bruce Wayne is not some pouty goth kid with hair in his eyes moping around all day. And this is why they got so many things wrong. They did some things right, and we'll get into the specifics. They did some things right. But the thing, we've talked about this so many times. This is the key. Bruce Wayne is the mask, right? The Batman is who he truly is. And his parents murdered, and the Batman is who he truly is, and Bruce Wayne is the mask. So Bruce Wayne is the playboy, and they did this so well in Batman Begins in the origin story when he starts becoming Batman and he asks Alfred, what am I supposed to do? He's like, do what billionaires do, buy things, date movie stars, buy things that aren't for sale. And so when he goes out in Batman Begins and he shows up and he's got two models on his arm and they swim in the pool and he's like, and he's buying it. And he's just like, man, that's so critical. And Robert Pattinson just mopes around. I mean, the stoicness in the Batman scenes, especially when he's like on the crime scenes with Jim Gordon, that was like, oh, that's how Batman is typically depicted in.
You didn't like emo Wayne?
Oh God, emo Wayne was just like, dude, no, Bruce Wayne is not a mopey, like.
Let's give him Cure hair too. So
I know he's got the Cure hair. Like, why does he? He's supposed to look like a tall, dashing billionaire, right? Right. So go ahead. I mean, I could go on forever.
Well, I think we should start in broad terms, like you were saying. And I had mixed feelings about it. I completely agree. It did some things right, and it did a lot of things wrong. But here's the thing: because we've gotten so such poor Batman movies lately, and the characters and everything, this was like such a cut above what we've gotten since Nolan. I think it was like, this is a rather large step in the right direction. So I felt like I was a little more forgiving because they had so far to come from, you know, to erase all the vestiges of Zack Snyder's nonsensical Batman with machine guns on the Batmobile, like all this insane stuff that had nothing to do with the character. Alfred was a mechanic, and that's all he was. Like, there was a lot to correct. And I felt like this movie did a lot of those corrections well, and then it went off into some weird tangents that weren't necessary, but I felt like they were forced in because they're like, we have to make this Batman different. How is this movie going to be different? But how is it also going to correct the mistakes of the last movie? So I felt like that mix wasn't always right, but sometimes it was. And, you know, keep in mind, too, it's a ridiculously long film. It's, what, 3 hours? Plus, 3 hours. You know, now that our arc light is gone, it is now a Regal, we get another 20 to 30 minutes of commercials and previews. So it was half a day in the movie theater.
Yeah, it's half a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with so much of that, too. Like, obviously, if you compare it to the Nolan movies, it's just not great at all. But if you compare it to the ridiculous shit that's come on in the last 10 years, it did a decent course correct. Yeah. I mean, the depiction of Gotham, I like the depiction of Gotham as yes. just this, it's a hellhole. It's just, there's garbage everywhere. Everything's, you know, it's a completely gutted inner city, and it's the crime is rampant.
It's in decline is where it should be. That's why they need Batman. Like, you know, if it was Metropolis, you wouldn't need Batman. Then you get, you get Superman. And that was kind of the whole point of like Gotham being dark and all of these things were actually explored. And what I really liked about it is Batman, he kind of explored the futility. Like, this was kind of like a year two story where he's still trying to figure everything out, where it's like, well, I can't be everywhere at once. And am I really making a difference? And there was a lot of those interesting themes explored. But I'm going to tell you the one thing that I was most bothered about the film. And it might be the same as yours, but it might be different. This film had the same problem that the TV show Gotham had. And that problem is that's like, well, we can't use the Joker, but we need to make every single other villain like the Joker. Like, the Riddler is not a serial killer. He's a genius that tries to outwit the police and Batman, and that's his kind of game. Like, it's not his goal to murder as many people as possible, even if he has like a purpose or whatever. That's the Joker. The Joker is a sociopathic psychopathic serial killer. So the kind of like the Jokerizing to all of these villains, and that happened in Gotham all the time. Like, there was no distinction between any of the villains. Everyone was like the Joker. So it felt like, all right, well, now it's a serial killer, and now we're going to add on, you know, a couple of riddles at the top to make it the Riddler. But that was my biggest problem with it. And it really felt like this movie was kind of cobbled together from a couple of different Batman stories and a couple of different films. Now, sometimes it really worked and sometimes it did not. Like, this was a mixture of The Long Halloween, the Batman story, Hush, where actually the Riddler becomes Hush and finds out Batman's secret identity, and Seven. Like, when you add all of these things, you're a serial killer playing with everybody. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a combo of all these things. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I think you bring it. This was not my top thing I disliked about this movie, but it is, you bring up valid things. Their depiction of the Riddler sort of sums up this movie. The diabolical nature of the Riddler in this movie and the revealing of this complex story of corruption, that was fascinating. That's the only thing that kept me in this theater for 3 hours long, was like, wow, this is a great story. But then again, they made him a crazy serial killer. I was like, well, like, and I was thinking the same thing. I'm watching, this isn't the Seven movie. Like, this is from 20 years ago. And again, the Riddler isn't a serial killer, you know, who, like, it's a almost Saw movie-esque in terms of his like torturing people. Like, that's not who the Riddler is.
Felt like that. There was a couple weird Saw things to it too.
And they were trying too hard. And this is the problem of, we got to make a different, not necessarily, you know, you just bring in the Riddler and the Penguin and Falcone in the Batman universe. You bring in the pre-existing people and you give interesting takes on them. That's what you do. And, you know, the story, Paul Dano, I think played the Riddler great in terms of a crazy guy, but the Riddler has a sense of humor, a different one than the Joker.
Right.
And this is the, I mean, God, where could I begin? I mean, this is like page one of what not to do. Oh, the people that killed Bruce Wayne's parents, they knew it. Like, no. And then they tried to dabble in with his relationship with Alfred, of saying, did Falcone make the hit? Was it just a random? We'll never know. No. The whole point, you are missing the whole crux of the Batman origin, His parents were murdered by just an average criminal. Crime had gotten so out of control, and he dedicated his life to this, to fighting crime. It doesn't have to be part of some elaborate mob hit or whatever. Like, it's so corrupt that...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, there is some retconning to that where...
I know they've retconned that a little bit.
Yeah, there's like Joe Chill was the killer, and he was kind of part of the mob, and the whole thing was like supposed to kill Thomas Wayne, not Martha Wayne, and that was like that was a mistake. Yeah, so but there is some and there's a validity to both of those origin stories that are still both horrible.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand the wanting to retcon it of like just this version didn't work. I was like, okay, this could be, for a second I went, this could be interesting. I'm not going to just be a diehard like it can never change, because right. if I was like, Thomas Wayne was trying to do something good and they took him out for that. That's an interesting take. That's an interesting retcon of like, oh, it's so corrupt. Thomas Wayne, you know, like JFK, he wanted to end the war in Vietnam and the CIA took him out. Like it's that big and that powerful. And Thomas Wayne was going to hurt the corrupt power structure of Gotham.
By the way, you just got this episode demonetized, but go ahead.
I know. I'm sorry, Chris. I'll try not to mention Epstein. Oh, shit. I just did it. And I'm all for an interesting take, but it was sort of like, this is the problem with this movie. They do an interesting thing and then just, a bad decision right next to it.
100%. It was, too many cooks in the kitchen, too many ideas and too many big things. I was reading an interview with the director, Matt Reeves, and he was saying that the Joker was actually in the film more. And they realized smartly that it was too much. So what they did is they took the Joker scenes out and just kept the one at the end where he is in the cell next to him. But it's a very odd Joker. It was literally like it was in shadow, and it looked like a Muppet Joker, like this weird makeup and hair. I'm not sure what was going on, but I am also happy to report, as I was reading the article, to like say that doesn't necessarily mean the Joker's in the next movie. It just wanted to show that the Joker is in this universe, which is good, because I don't want these films to feel like, all right, well, now the next one has to be the Joker. It's not like it doesn't have to follow the Marvel universe where it's like, okay, well, whatever the stinger is, whatever that's going to set up the next movie, you have to follow that guy. You don't. You can do whatever you want. You could show the Joker and then have Mr. Freeze as the next villain. It doesn't matter.
That's what I would like to see. If they're going to make more of these, like, also, the Joker has been done brilliantly, really twice. Heath Ledger's and then Joaquin Phoenix's Joker those are two brilliant interpretations of the Joker. Like brilliant. So don't do it again. Like let's get a really good interpretation of Mr. Freeze. Like, let's find out, like, Poison Ivy in the cartoon, you and I always talked about how she had she was like an environmentalist that had become like an eco-terrorist. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How is our environment doing today? Could that be a relevant thing to point out? Like, there's so many interesting things you could do with this rather than fall into the same things. And I just think Robert Pattinson, first of all, he's not that physically imposing. I mean,
well, let's talk about the casting for sure, because that's a really good point, because I didn't think anyone, as far as their physical body type, like, necessarily matched the characters. And I think it was a conscious decision. It was like casting Michael Keaton as Batman, you know, the first time, where it could be anybody. And the thing about Robert Pattinson, he's not a tiny man. He's relatively tall. But they never played it that he was like this giant hulking guy. They really played it like he was, you know, just an average guy.
Yeah, he is a tall guy. I think he's like 6'1 or 6'2 maybe. And he's always been lanky. So clearly, you know, he put some muscle on. They showed, you know, with his shirt off.
They could have Star-Lorded him if they wanted to.
Yeah, they could have Star-Lorded him a little bit. I mean, the Batman costume was interesting. Some of the casting I really like. Jeffrey Wright, and this is something they got right. Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon was fantastic.
I think so too, yeah.
And they did a lot of, they pulled from a lot of the, like, Batman Year One where Jim Gordon's working his way up in a very corrupt Gotham Police Department.
Yep.
And even though that was handled very well in Batman Begins, the Nolan movie, they did this in a different way here, but just as I thought it was like really effective. And their relationship, Batman, Jim Gordon, I thought was a really, it was a really good one, because it was like, they were all the somewhat on every crime scene, there was at least one cop going, hey, this guy's not a cop. This is a crime scene. Yeah. Like that's a legitimate, like this could, we could be tampering with evidence here.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was great. I thought the casting was that. Obviously, like I said, I liked Paul Dano. Zoe Kravitz played a great Catwoman.
Let's talk about Paul Dano for a second. That guy, it doesn't matter what role he's in, he gives you the creeps constantly. Everything from, you know, there will be blood to no matter what he plays. You're always like, oh my God. I think if you saw him in person, it would also be like, there's something off-putting about him. And he was so perfect as the Riddler too, because, you know, you kind of saw that craziness. Now, I don't think like his performance and his interpretation, I thought were really cool. Like he thought he was really smart, and, you know, where I think it missed the mark is making him a serial killer. But making him smarter and physically, you know, not as big as the other guys that are punching each other, that makes total sense. And when he just started like yelling, like you know, like almost like a toddler, it was like really, really off-putting, and just made your skin crawl. And that's really, whenever you have scenes in Arkham, that's how you should feel. So I thought that was brilliant.
And it made sense within the context of this character. This is the thing I like, and this is the good part that they did with the script.
Yeah.
The Riddler storyline, origin story, is great. He was in this orphanage. I mean, he was abused, like, you know, and he concocted this, you know, V for Vendetta, you know, 30-year plan or whatever.
I didn't even think of that. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Which is like brilliant. So when he's in Arkham and it's clear his plan is not going to get finished, he goes crazy because he's been dreaming of this moment, and he has won every single moment he's gotten them. He's played everybody from the Batman, from everybody. He's played them perfectly until the very end when he loses. And that's when he goes nuts, which is like, he is going to react as a child, because this is the vengeance that comes from childhood trauma. Right. I mean, this is what the Batman is always like at its core. And when they miss this, it's about childhood trauma. I mean, Bruce Wayne sees his parents murdered in front of his eyes that forever scarred him. And most of the supervillains had some kind of traumatic experience. And you see like how close they are. There's that great scene that we always would talk about in The Dark Knight, where Heath Ledger's Joker is like, don't talk like them. You're not one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and that speech was like, boy, the Joker was right. You wear dress up like a bat and fucking beat the shit out of people. Like, you've got some issues, bro. Like it's you know, like that's the core of, and that relationship plays, that's the, and this was done. This was what was done well in this movie. Mm-hmm. The Selina Kyle, Bruce Wayne, she comes from trauma, you know, and they put a new spin on it. Her mom was a prostitute for the mob who was murdered by Falcone. So she hates her. I mean, that was a great addition to the Selina Kyle story. She grew up in crime. She grew up in like, and that prostitution.
That's specifically pulled from Long Halloween. That kind of storyline. And one of the things that I think they also got right when we're talking about like the characters of Batman is like, as corny as that line at the beginning was, is like, who are you? I'm vengeance. And I'm like, oh my God, really? Do we need that? And then I realized, as the movie progressed, we kind of needed it. Maybe we could have had it a little less ham-handedly delivered. But since this is kind of like a Batman year two-ish story, he's still figuring out what Batman is, who Batman is, and who he is. And he realizes as the movie progresses, there was a nice arc of like, well, I can't just be vengeance. I have to be more. And as he's saving the people at the end from the Gotham being surrounded by a dam or something, that there's water everywhere. that's really what Batman is. Batman is a protector, and, you know, he helps people and saves them, and that's actually, you know, what Batman ultimately becomes. And I thought that was a really powerful and interesting way to kind of present it, because if you're first starting out, you're like, and you're mad and you know you're traumatized, it's all going to be about the violence and trauma and revenge. And then as he grows as Batman, then you, and what Batman's supposed to represent, I thought that was, those were some good scenes at the end for sure.
I totally agree, because it's like, this is the evolution of the Batman that has been done in numerous comics and numerous versions, but this is the overall general is, mm-hmm. he first just goes out because he wants to kick the shit out of whoever he thinks killed his dad, right?
Right.
And his mom. Mm-hmm. And he wants to beat up street criminals. And this is the thing that was done very well in Batman Begins, is he lives with the street criminals and realizes that poverty causes this and socioeconomic things cause this. And that's sort of the evolution of the Batman of like, I want to catch the head of the snake, you know, I mean, I want to get crime at the source. Mm-hmm. The street level criminals are basically just like pawns. And so the way this movie did that, he's like, yeah, I've got to be more than vengeance. When he hears somebody go, I'm vengeance, towards the end, he goes, oh shit, I'm just as nuts as this guy.
Right.
And there's that great scene at the end where he is leading people. And this is a weird thing. You're right. The Gotham is surrounded by a seawall that yes. seven trucks can just blow up, and then it floods yes. like,
like Atlantis.
Like, I was like, what? Like, Manhattan yeah. doesn't have a seawall. Yeah. What are you talking about? That was a little like weird. That didn't yeah, make yeah. sense. And it was just justifying this kind of, they're in Madison Square Garden called Gotham Square Garden.
Right. And that was a really pivotal point at the end too. Now, like when you talk about that, like, you know, vengeance, because at the end, he wasn't really fighting the supervillain at the end. He was fighting literally one of his minions that he had inspired. And here's where I think it kind of missed the mark a little bit. I get what the intention was and where it was supposed to go, but I don't think it landed. And that is, it's like you have a super charismatic person on social media and they're inspiring you to do awful things, even though that person may be in prison. And you have a radicalization and you have a movement of people basically being brainwashed to follow the Riddler's, you know, his manifesto, essentially, to murder a bunch of people. And I get the real world allegories and subtext to that, but it is, at the end of the day, a superhero movie. So do you want Batman fighting a random henchman as the final battle? of the movie. And yeah. I'm like, I don't know if that quite landed. I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to show the, you know, radicalization of people through social media and through leadership, and also showing that, you know, Batman had the same problem that the Riddler did, because he was inspiring somebody that was going for vengeance. So, but I felt like it didn't land. It didn't quite work.
It missed a lot of stuff here. I mean, that one scene as he's leading everybody out, Batman, this is the thing that they were trying to accomplish in terms of what of Batman realizing, I got to be more than just vengeance, where he's leading everybody out. He's holding up that flare and there's that overhead shot of him leading everybody out.
Right. Out of the darkness, Graham.
Out of the darkness. Wow. I didn't figure that out. And I was like, oh, he's realizing, okay, that was a powerful scene. But again, like, and then the Catwoman relationship, she's just like, you should join me. No. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi. I was like, oh, we spent this whole movie seeing these two yeah. kind of figure each other out. And she's mm-hmm. like, oh, maybe I can actually trust this guy, because there's no men I've been able to trust since they've all been mm-hmm. abusers and murderers mm-hmm. and shit. And seeing, oh, this guy's different and maybe we're similar. That's the thing of, you know, Selina recognizes the similarity in the two of them, as right. does the Batman. Mm-hmm. But then it's just kind of like, bye. And it was like trying to set up too many sequels at the end.
Right, right.
You know,
like, oh, we can't have any attachments by the end of this movie, so we have a clean slate going into the next film. So There can't be any entanglements, and so I agree with you. I don't think it was necessary. That could have been explored a little bit more. She didn't necessarily have to leave like right away, and they didn't have to end it on such a weird like this can never be note. Like it's not the Incredible Hulk, you know, that has to leave every city.
Just walk away to that sad music.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing too, again, with Dark Knight Rises, I think Zoe Kravitz did a good job in playing Catwoman. Any of the problems with her were in the script, in my opinion. The Catwoman in Dark Knight Rises, they handled that relationship, but you saw too that they did a better character arc with Catwoman in Dark Knight Rises in terms of her just like, I'm out of here. I'm just in it for me. I'm going to steal what I got to steal. And she has a character arc of like, well, wait a minute. There is some good here. And I am actually in love with Batman. And she's like, come with me. And then she's like, the hell with it. I'll stay and fight and get myself blown up. And you know, like there just wasn't as much of an arc in terms of the writing of Catwoman in this movie. You know, like she didn't learn much, or she, you know what I mean, there wasn't that much growth to her character, right? That was a little just disappointing, that I think was a missed opportunity, because that's such a great area, is like, how can the Batman be in love? How can he find that? How can he who could be his girlfriend? Well, there's only two women who could ever be his girlfriend: Ra's al Ghul's daughter and the Catwoman. Those are the only two people that could ever like. So they just didn't investigate that enough. So
and Talia drugged him to have sex for them to you know have Damian.
Yeah, right out of the comic. I know. So it's like there was some good things in this, but some really missed opportunities. And. And again, the Robert Pattinson's emo Bruce Wayne, just I that was like, come on. Like,
yeah, that didn't land for sure.
He like, never right, smiled. Now,
if he was in a band, maybe, you know, I could have bought it. Yeah.
Bruce Wayne was in a band. And also, too, the other thing that was just such a waste, the depiction of Alfred and their relationship was just like, Alfred was useless. I mean, he literally was just a butler in this movie. Like,
and I'll tell you, it was miles above what it was before in Zack Snyder's universe. Snyder's universe, he was literally a mechanic. He was like the mechanic. That was all he was. Now, this one at least, he was the butler, but he was also like, they made like, you're not my father. He's like, yeah, I know. But ultimately, Alfred, he is his father. He is a surrogate father for Bruce Wayne and for Batman. Yeah, he raised him. So there's you're right, like it could have gone further, there could have been a lot more, but I think it's what I liked about it was like the conversation of about you know, when he was ready to just kind of give up and like, oh, my father was an evil man too, he ordered a man killed, and you know, Alfred set him straight. He said, no, your father was a good man, he made a mistake, but he never ordered anybody killed, but he trusted, you know, basically he went to a mob boss for help, which obviously was his mistake. But I liked that it gave a little bit of more of a grayish hint than the black and white of Batman's world, where he was like, all right, you know, this is a crime, it needs to be punished, everyone's either good or bad. And Alfred was telling him, that's not the case. Your father was a good man that made a mistake. And it makes him kind of rethink, well, maybe that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that I'll give you credit for it. That's true. That was a very good scene in the hospital. And there was a couple scenes where Alfred like helps in the deciphering of the Riddler's codes, where he's like in a previous life. And you're like, oh, okay, because he was, you know, they
he
talk
was
SAS.
About.
Yeah, it was SAS. So that was interesting, but it just felt, there wasn't that sort of, usually Alfred is depicted in sort of like an older brother or an uncle, you know, he's the surrogate father. He's still the butler, but he kind of, you know, like in the Dark Knight graphic novels, you know, he's always sort of needling Batman to, you know, play it safe or whatever. And, you know, like there's a scene where, you know, whatever, he's like, would you like to this? Write them, and he goes, write them a check. What about the middle-aged men, the Foundation for Middle-Aged Men who are trying to battle their demons on the streets or whatever? And Bruce Wayne goes, write them a check. And he goes, you're witness keen as ever, sir. Like that relate. I mean, the way, and then Michael Caine did a great job with it. Obviously their relationship was great for three movies. This one just kind of, it literally just felt like Alfred was just a butler or an employee. Well, rather than, I don't know.
Yeah, it could have gone further, but it's also, you know, Alfred's another guy that was, could be kind of imposing and bigger, like you said, SAS. But Andy Serkis, again, I think this was a real conscious effort to make everyone look kind of like an average build or an average size, because this Alfred was not imposing at all. I mean, Andy Serkis is, you know, he's been in 1,000 movies, especially a lot of mocap stuff, but... I felt like this was really an effort to, like, with the casting, you know, I wonder if the casting director is like 4'5" or something, like she's making a statement. So, but
or it's casting against Robert Pattinson to make Pattinson look taller. And
yeah, there was something there, because it was kind of a thread that went through all, the entirety of the casting. But I felt like, again, we talked about it before, it's a step in the right direction with Alfred. Like, I feel like this can be developed more now with future movies, but it was a good start.
Right. Yeah, it's and I get that, like, you know, I'm not one of these, they shouldn't, I get it. They're, you know, there's been a bunch of graphic novels since The Dark Knight in the 80s. So, I mean, you're going to keep making these. I'm going to keep seeing them. But I just, you really have to understand the source material of the Batman comics, and you really have to reference that. And this felt like they were referencing the Hollywood movies, not the source material.
Enough. It was a mixed bag. Yeah. It was like, some of the stuff was like, we'll grab from this story, but we'll grab from this movie. We'll grab from this story, but then we'll grab from this other movie. So I felt like it was like, you know, we were saying, like, it was just they threw everything in a pot, and some of it was good, and some of it, you know, just didn't mix well with the others. Thing.
And I saw in the credits that Colin Farrell was in this movie. Who was he? Was he the Joker?
No, he was the Penguin under 1,000 pounds of makeup. I mean, I didn't even recognize him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's impressive. I'll give him credit for that.
Yep. You had no idea it was him. It was pretty incredible. Like, but you know, that's another example of too, like, you know, the Penguin. I get that this wasn't full on Penguin. Like, you know, he didn't have a machine gun and an umbrella.
Right.
But, you know, this was kind of like, all right, well, he might evolve into something a lot more sinister with a top hat and a monocle. But at some point. But again, part of the canon is that, you know, Penguin runs a club and all the, you know, villains and high class Gotham comes to it. And, you know, some of the stuff was there are referencing the comics. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I like the use of the technologies of the contact lenses. That was cool, because that's also part of Batman is always, you know, his superpower is he's rich. So he has technology. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And I was happy that, like, oh, Penguin's just all mobbed up and, you know, like, he's just, you know, I'm just running a business. I'm a club owner, you know, like that was done well. The club within the club, I liked that.
Of course.
But the ending, I don't know. Yeah, the ending was kind of like, you know, after 3 hours.
It didn't fully land. The ending, like I said, I got the idea of what it was supposed to be, but it didn't fully land. Like, I wonder too if it kind of ended like in a different way, where, like, all right, well, let's get rid of the henchmen, then maybe have the final scenes with the Riddler, even if they're in Arkham, it might have made more sense. I mean, they definitely teased like a Hush storyline when the Riddler was kept saying Bruce Wayne over and over again, like, you know, and of course Batman thought, oh, he knows my secret identity, and he's like, oh, Bruce Wayne, and then he finally said, that's the only one we didn't get. But of course in the comics in Hush, he does figure it out.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, This movie, like, I wasn't furious at this film. Like, I thought I was.
That's great. That's good. Now, were you in a food theater or were you in a regular theater?
Well, I was in a theater where the seats recline.
Okay.
And I brought in Chinese food. So kind of.
So you were already comfortable.
I was definitely comfortable. I was comfortable. My feet were up. I was eating a stir fry. It was nice. I'd spent the day surfing and was at the beach. And so I really.
Tofu and rice?
A little tofu and rice, some vegetables in there. Mm-hmm. My big treat for myself is I have a diet soft drink. You know, that's my going nuts. So yeah, I was in a good mood. I mean, it was nice.
That's something the Joker would do. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is. So, I mean, I was definitely going into this movie like, here we go, like mm-hmm. 3 hours. All right. You know, but I was surprised that I was engaged as I was for 3 hours. And the places where the movie failed or they just got it wrong or I wasn't like incensed, like I wasn't like screaming right.
It didn't ruin the film because it got so many things right, you forgave the things it got wrong. So it was even though it was a mixed bag overall, you know, I'd say it landed on the it got things right side.
I would say 65-35 right, yeah. Versus wrong is how I would give it. And
I agree, yeah, about there.
You know, and the 65 was like just was, and the 35, you know, every time it would start to get a little too annoying or dumb, like something kind of interesting would happen. You'd go, all right, well, we're back to this. This is cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, let me, before we go, where do you put this one in terms of your rankings of Batman movies?
I'd say probably somewhere in the middle, underneath Nolan, but above George Clooney. So,
yeah, you know, I think I would.
I will say this, even though it doesn't hold up, I still have an affinity for the Tim Burton original Batman because we didn't really get a Batman movie, a right one, since like Adam West for so long. So
right. That
one, I know it's going to be hard for the younger people to believe, but that one was dark when it came out. Like it was like the way it was like, oh, it's a dark Batman that we've always wanted to see in the comics. Now, like I said, it doesn't quite hold up, but I still have an affinity for it. So I would say it's somewhere in there.
The Vicky Vale thing, I couldn't ever get past that movie when it came out. The Tim Burton thing, I was excited. I was dark and brooding. And then the Vicky Vale thing made me enraged. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, he brought Vicky Vale, brought a girl into the Batcave and revealed his identity like just immediately. And I was like,
pretty
no.
quickly. Yeah.
My rankings would go. The Nolan movies for sure. In the Nolan movie order, I would say Dark Knight Rises and Batman Begins in that order. Mm-hmm. Batman Begins, I think, is the best Batman origin story movie we've had.
Right.
But I absolutely would put this above. I would put this Pattinson movie above. Definitely that Batman Superman train wreck where like Martha. Like
absolutely. Anything that Zack Snyder did, this is above. So it's really I mean the best way to describe it is it's just under the Nolan movies.
I would put that too. I would put it in the four position in terms of if you were to rank all the movies, the Nolan are in the top three, and you can interchange those three whatever way you see fit, you know, but then, in the four position, I'd put this one, the Robert Pattinson, the Batman. I would.
Mm-hmm.
Because the things it got right in the best way.
Yep, I agree.
And the things it got wrong were not so egregious the way the other movies got things wrong.
Yes, for sure.
You know?
Take two of these and call me in the morning.
Oh, God.
Mr. Freeze. And
kill the heroes. Like, yeah.
There's a lot of bad Batman out there. So this is
Val Kilmer?
Come on. Yeah.
Val Kilmer.
Yep. There's a lot. There's a lot. Yeah. Some of them you forget about too. I'm like, oh my God, that happened. That's right. Yeah. I think Jim Carrey was a Riddler in one of them too. That's right.
Batman and Robin? Go watch that one. Go watch Batman and Robin. Well, Joel Schumacher said in an interview it's going to have more bat butt than ever.
Yeah, he wasn't lying.
No, he just wanted to put dudes in tight outfits and show their asses on screen.
That's, yes. Yeah, and no one told him no, sadly.
Well, Chris, this was just absolutely fantastic to do a Batman spoiler up with you.
Super fun. Great idea. And I'm glad we were able to put it together. I mean, you being all the way, you know, in Hawaii, but with modern technology, we could still get it done.
We can be anywhere, Chris. We can
as long
be,
as we have Sean checking levels, I think we're good.
Well, tell everybody where they can follow you and everything.
Absolutely. I've started a new content company called White Cat Entertainment. You can check me out at whitecatentertainment.com with podcasts, scripted stuff, graphic novels, and more. And I'm on Twitter at Chris J. Mancini. And then you could also follow White Cat Stories. The two podcasts are What Are You Watching with me, and Graham will be on one of those very shortly. A little surprise episode wrap-up coming up. And the other one I want to tell people about is The Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood. With everything going on in the world, I wanted to create a scripted show to kind of help people relax, go to sleep, and actually go off into these different worlds as Professor Atwood goes under the ocean and travels into the forest and looks for glaciers and helps a giant squid out of the Panama Canal, and they have music and sound design. They're funny stories, but they also can help you relax and help you sleep. So that's The Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood.
Nice, folks. You can just go to, if you go to grahamelwood.com, you can see my YouTube show, Political Vigilante. I also have a podcast with Lee Camp called Government Secrets, where we talk about all the evil shit America's done over the years. So it's a very short show. There's not much. America's just been perfect for years, so there's not a lot of stuff.
Limited series?
Yeah, it's very limited, series. Also, I'm starting to have more tour. I'm going to be posting more tour dates. Right now, I'm going to be headlining the Blue Note in Waikiki and the beautiful island of Oahu, April 6th. So if you're on Oahu or you live in Oahu or you're coming to visit, go to grahamelwood.com for tickets. Sign up for the grahamelwood.com newsletter. I just send it out once a month. You get a free smoothie recipe if you sign up for that.
Sweet.
And so there's going to be, I'm definitely going to be more tour dates in the late spring and summer. Lee Camp and I are going to be doing some live Government Secrets. So just go to grahamelwood.com and sign up for the newsletter and you'll get up to date. And all my social media is at Graham Elwood. So check all that out.
Oh, Graham, I forgot to mention one thing that is coming up. I wanted to tell people about, I'm actually going to be a Discovery Channel show called Inventions That Change History, talking about Ouija boards, the Twister, and a bunch of other like pop culture games like pinball machines and things like that. That'll be March 31st on Discovery Plus.
Awesome. That's great, dude.
Thanks.
Well, check that out, everybody. Thanks for watching. This has been so fun to do a spoiler rep. And we're also going to do, I forget, are we going to do the Oscar thing for CFN or just for your thing? I forget.
Well, you know what? We could do it for both. We'll do it for my thing, but then we could put it on the CFN feed as well. It doesn't cost anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't. All right, so we're going to do an Oscar wrap-up, which we haven't done in about 3 years.
We are, so this should be very interesting. That's the secret show I was referring to. We're going to do a fun Oscar wrap-up, and it will make Graham watch the Oscars, so that'll be interesting.
Yes, which I haven't watched in 3 or 4 years. You're going to make me watch the Oscars, you sons of bitches.
Interestingly, it might be shorter than Batman, though. So,
But the same level of corruption, interestingly enough.
Most likely, just a much smaller amount of interest. So,
the dwindling ratings of the Oscars.
Yes. Who? Yeah. The Golden Globes, like, oh, it's in a race to irrelevancy. Oh, you guys are putting on the gas. Who's gonna win? You're both really getting there as fast as possible. Well done, everybody.
You know, your audience is like no one under the age of 35 is watching any of these shows at all.
No, nobody cares. Even Seth Rogen said, like, I don't care about, awards for, car companies or cars. Like, why does anyone care about the Oscars?
Yeah.
You could make it interesting and a celebration of film and the history and the richness of the medium. But no, you've decided not to do that. Okay, great.
You've bailed on what could have been a cool thing.
Yes.
That's so great. Well, guys, you know what? We should probably end it this way. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot
first. Boom. All right, buddy. Thanks, man. Good to see you.
That was awesome. Thanks again, Graham.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you the file and you can post it on all your stuff.
Awesome. That'll be great. Thanks.
All right, dude. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye. Chris Mancini, ladies. That was so fun. Oh God, that was a blast. Let's see. All right. No tips on that's fine. So thank you everybody watching. Hit the like button. Did I miss the Batman discussion? We've been talking about it for a while. Yes, on Twitch. Thank you, everybody, for watching and paying attention. Thank you to Kate, our moderator. Snap the Jap, Sean Sakami wrote, so great to see you two doing a comedy film or spoiler rep for the Batman, taking me back to a simpler time. Yes, it was. Remember when we could just talk about movies, not have to worry about COVID or mandates or masks or Ukraine or Trump or whatever, any of that crazy shit. Well, folks, Late Night Crypto Lounge tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern time. So I got to run to get ready for that. So I got a video meeting talking with the... working on some other projects. But if you just tuned in, this will be available. The Batman spoiler up will be, if you're a Patreon member, you can get this and Rockfin Premium. And of course, we'll release the audio for this on Comedy Film Nerds. So thanks, everybody. Thank you so much to everybody in the chat, Sean, everybody. Good to see the Comedy Film Nerd fans in the chat as well. Thank you, Kate. Thank you to Chris Mancini. And remember, guys, follow the money, connect the dots, get the truth. That's what the Batman does. That's how you make Gotham great again. Shave your knuckles for justice.